Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Strategist Carl Calabrese from Masiello Martucci Calabrese & Associates is with us live this morning. With these impeachment hearings, Carl, what is your expectation?
Well, you know what? That's going to be very interesting because if these hearings are just a continuation of the hearings that were held behind closed doors, same witnesses, same testimony, much of which has leaked out or has come out in transcripts, then I think this could be a big yawn because you're going to have kind of boring people, actually. You're going to have career bureaucrats in foreign policy kind of droning on.
You're kidding me. Those aren't boring people.
No, not at all. This is great television. This is must-see TV. That could get real old real fast. However, if the Democrats have some kind of surprise, some kind of ambush, something they've really held back and a card that they've literally kept in their vest and they throw it down, that could produce all kinds of interest and drama. So we'll see. We'll just have to wait and see. Remind everyone that thus far the televised hearings that Democrats have conducted have been pretty bad for them. The Michael Cohen hearing backfired. The Bob Mueller hearing was a disaster. And even the Kavanaugh hearings backfired in the sense that going into the Kavanaugh hearings, Democrats had a huge advantage over Republicans in terms of enthusiasm for voting in the midterm elections. 83% of Democrats said they were enthused about voting in the midterms, only 60% of Republicans. That is what waves are made out of, where one side stays home en masse. By the end of those Kavanaugh hearings, because the Democrats and the left overreached and came forward with witnesses that were shown now to have lied, that number was almost even, 80% of Republicans versus 83%. That was still enough of a gap to produce a good night for the Democrats. I don't deny that. But had they not had those kind of hearings, it would have been a landslide wave. Not just a wave, but a landslide wave.
You mentioned Kavanaugh and then Mueller, and then there's been the investigations that have been going on for basically 2 years now.
Since inauguration.
And
literally.
That kind of puts somebody like me and Susan and everybody else who's talking about this and maybe in a tough position to, you know, impeachment is a very serious deal. Yet it's a really hard job to be able to tell people that this is a serious deal when stuff like this has been going on and we've been having these live nationally broadcast proceedings for other issues that kind of turn out to just float away into the breeze after they're done.
Well, you're right, Brian. The left literally began talking about impeachment even before the man took the oath of office. And it's, you know, it was the Russia thing, and then it was obstruction of justice, and then it was the Emoluments Clause, whatever that is. And then there was the 25th Amendment, and it has just gone on and on. And now the Ukrainian call. And the question is, if the president did something improper, does it rise to the level of what the Constitution says? Remember, the founders were very leery of impeachment. At one point in the constitutional debate, they wanted to put in one of the reasons you could impeach was maladministration in office. And they rejected that because they said it was too vague, that you could fit that into any partisan argument and say you're maladministrating office, therefore you're impeachable. James Madison in the Federalist Papers said that impeachment, if you go down that road, it cannot be seen as partisan or it will be seen as illegitimate. And so here we are, less than a year away from the election, talking about undoing an election. I would say that if the president did something improper with that call, if he did, I think the American people ought to decide if he's fit for office in less than a year, not Democrats in Congress. This was a very partisan vote. Not one single Republican voted for it, unlike the last two impeachments where other members of other parties came in and joined the effort. And so, that's what we're looking at here. I think if he did something wrong, let's have it as part of the debate going into 2020. Let the American people decide who they want to be their next president, not partisan Democrats, one party in Congress, essentially undoing an election that 63 million people voted for this man. So that's my opinion. If you did something wrong, let's have it decided in the political campaign context, not in a partisan congressional context.
How long do these hearings last before either side becomes unhinged?
Oh, I think the unhinging is going to happen today. The way Congressman Schiff has run this process with such a heavy hand and such secrecy. I mean, this has been done all behind closed doors, and all of the rules of previous impeachment procedures and processes have been flaunted, if not outright ignored. In past impeachment proceedings, both sides, minority, majority, had the right to call whoever witnesses they wanted. That wasn't the case here. Republicans couldn't call any, and when they were finally given permission to call witnesses, they had to submit those names in writing to Chairman Schiff, and he rejected all the important ones the Republicans wanted. The whistleblower has been kept in secret. Can you imagine this? I mean, one of the basic precepts of American justice is you get to face your accuser. And here this whistleblower has been held in hiding and not able to be cross-examined. That's outrageous. And so I think there's a lot of anger, a lot of pent-up anger on the Republican side that could come out today, and I think you'll see that. And that will in turn ignite anger on the other side. And, you know, it could degenerate very quickly, at which point the American people will turn it off. And then once the left realizes that they're not being helped by these hearings, then they'll probably switch gears and find another reason to impeach him.
The impeachment hearings. We're getting a little bit of a primer this morning from Carl Calabrese, Republican strategist, joining us in studio. Carl, this all really centers around a phone call that the president, President Trump, made to the president of Ukraine. How many people were on that phone call? Because it seems like there were a lot.
Actually, not that many. In fact, the only witness thus far that the Democrats have brought in to the closed hearings was the Colonel Vidman. He was the only one. And I thought it was interesting that he said that the transcript that the White House released was an accurate transcript, because there was some talk that the Trump administration may have doctored the transcript. Colonel Vidman said, no, that's the call I heard. A couple of minor differences, but nothing of any significance or substance. But he was in the room. And if you read his testimony, again, it was 304 pages, but you can read the summary. Most of his concerns is he thought he was not comfortable with the call. He thought it was improper that the president brought up the topic of corruption in general. And that's fine. That's his opinion. The president conducts foreign policy in this country, not bureaucrats, not military. And he brought up the issue of corruption. And you can look at that one of two ways. If you're a Trump supporter, you can say and you can argue that there's an ongoing Department of Justice investigation into Ukrainian corruption and influence in the American presidential election of 2016. That's one of the reasons. And by the way, they were involved in trying to help Hillary Clinton. That's one reason why Paul Manafort is in jail today, with the information that the Ukrainian government leaked. So you can say that that's certainly a legitimate issue. And we know that a very corrupt energy firm in the Ukraine, Burisma, hired the vice president's son when Joe Biden was sitting vice president, when Joe Biden was the point man for Ukrainian policy in the Obama administration. They hire this guy who has no experience in the energy business. They pay him $83,000 a month. You could make the case that that was certainly an effort to at least buy favor, if not outright access and influence to the vice president, and could be lumped under the general area of corruption in government. You can make that case. On the other hand, you can make the case that he was trying to get dirt on his opponent or possible opponent in the 2020 election. If that's the case, then I would say, does that rise to the level of an impeachable offense, a president being political? It was a very fleeting reference to the issue. He didn't pursue it. The Ukrainian president said he never felt any pressure. He never felt there was a quid pro quo. And so we're down to debating kind of a quick, off-the-cuff reference to a campaign, possibly. And again, does that rise to the level of an impeachable offense? And I'll remind your listeners, because I've said this before on your show, that everybody is fond of reciting the words, high crimes and misdemeanors. And so, well, we really don't know what those are. And I remind people that you've got to read the words before that, which are bribery, treason, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. So obviously the founders were setting the bar pretty high, bribery and treason and other crimes to that level. That's how I interpret it. And remember also that the Constitution was passed in 1789. In 1780, just 9 years before that, an event occurred in this country's history that was tumultuous, that was searing, that was just, it just shook the pillars of the colonies then. And that was the betrayal of Benedict Arnold, the treason of Benedict Arnold, who did take money and did take rank and did take status to go over to the British side and could have ended up giving them the victory in the war. That was just an incredible event. And I think it was seared into the hearts and minds of those gentlemen who wrote that Constitution. So I believe when they were writing those words, bribery and treason, they had in their mind, first and foremost, what Benedict Arnold did. And if any president ever sold out his or her country for money, power, status, whatever, to the interests of another country, that is the level of impeachable offense that I think they had in mind.
Carl Calabrese, political strategist, is in studio this morning. With these impeachment hearings starting in just a couple of hours, Carl, there are risks for both sides here, right? What are the risks for the Democrats with these hearings and then the Republicans?
Well, let's take the Republicans first. The Republicans' risk is that, again, as I said, the Democrats have some type of surprise, some witness, some evidence that they've kept hidden up to this point that you know, could really change the debate and put the president and Republicans on the defensive and really stoke up this impeachment talk. If they have such a thing, that would be a risk for the Republicans. The risk for the Democrats is what it usually is, that they overreach. I've always said the left tends to overreach. And if they overreach and the American people see that it is an overreach and say, gee, we went through 2.5 years of the Mueller investigation and that turned out to be a big dud, and then the obstruction of justice and all the other things. And here we are getting into an election when we really, as American voters, want Congress to enact and deal with certain types of issues that are important to my life, all we have is this political melodrama going on. And that could produce a backlash at the polls. So they've got to be careful that doesn't come back to bite them next year, both at the presidential level and at the congressional level.
I don't know, Carl. You know, you mentioned a backlash at the polls that could result from this. And a lot of the talk is you have to convince the American people that you have to get them on your side to either go forward with the impeachment hearings or, you know, just to convince them as to how they're going to vote next year in 2020. I just go into this thinking people have their minds made up already. Like, whose mind is changing based on what we're going to hear today or tomorrow or next week or the week after?
Well, we are very polarized, Brian. You're absolutely correct. The difference is that in the old days, when I was coming up through politics, the undecided vote was always in the double digits. It would be 15-20%. Now it's in the low single digits. But in close races that are defined by very polarized sides, you know, true believers on both sides coming in at 45% each or more. You know, your undecideds now may be 5 or 6%, but they still can make a difference. And the other thing is, remember, all politics is local. This is going to be decided in, for example, the control of the House of Representatives is going to be decided in about maybe 30 to 40 congressional districts around the country. And 31 of those districts, Donald Trump won in 2016 and won big, but then they elected a Democrat member of Congress 2 years later. Those people are up this year. 29 of those 31, 32 voted for impeachment. You better believe that's going to be an issue in those districts. And a lot of those people who voted for Trump in 16 and then voted for a Democrat member of Congress in 2018, they're going to be the targets to say, look what you did. Now it's time to vote the right way. So you're going to have those elections going on. And then, of course, you're going to have the presidential candidates defining the issue at that level. So that's where it's going to be decided.
I do think, though, that you could hear in the hearings today, they could say, oh, wait, we found the actual transcript of the call. And it said, you know, the president said, hey, you know, how's the Ukraine doing? Say hi to your mom. And then hung up the phone. And you'd still have people say, well, you know, I still don't like him. Impeach him. Or it could go the other way. And he could say the most heinous thing. You know, it's an absolute bribe that he's suggesting on the phone. And you'd still have people saying, well, he's the president. He can do that. And I just don't see anybody's mind changing. Changing no matter what comes out.
Of the two sides, the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump, you're absolutely correct. Okay, those are people that are pretty much locked in. They love them or they hate them. But you still have a small group, 6, 7, 8% of people who can go either way. And the other thing to remember is elections are always about turnout. And what side produces the strongest argument to get the biggest turnout of their base vote? Those two factors, base vote turnout and that very small slice of undecided, is what these hearings are about, I think, and what they will eventually determine, you know, who controls Congress and who sits in the White House.
Carl Calabrese, our in-studio guest, political strategist, talking about what's going to go on in Washington today. Carl, it's been called, you know, maybe the most important of these hearings that's yet to happen, yet this is just the first of what's going to be many. This could last hours today, and then there's going to be another day this week, and then maybe a few weeks more of this before it finally wraps up. After it wraps up, it potentially goes to the Senate, but nobody's really expecting this to be taken up in the Senate.
No, and in fact, Lindsey Graham said the other day that unless the Democrats allow the whistleblower to testify and be examined and cross-examined, that they will dismiss it out of hand. It won't even get to a trial. And so he's kind of laid down the gauntlet here that that's the standard. They want to be able to question the person who started the whole thing. And if they don't bring that person out, then if Graham holds true, and you know, the thing about Lindsey Graham, if you're on my side of the aisle, you know that oftentimes he says one thing on the cable television shows and then does something totally different or does nothing when it comes time to really act. And that's been a disappointment. But that's what he said. They will dismiss it out of hand unless the whistleblower is brought forward and examined and cross-examined.
But this all came to be because of the whistleblower, right?
Oh, yes, because of the whistleblower. And if you look at his background, I mean, he certainly has a very active partisan background with Speaker Pelosi, with the former head of the CIA, John Brennan. He has a relationship with Susan Rice, and certainly with Congressman Schiff. In fact, actually met with Schiff and his staff to prepare the whistleblower document, something Schiff lied about, by the way, on television, that he or his staff never met with him. That turned out to be an outright bold-faced lie.
Do you need to hear from the whistleblower, though? Because the thing is, it's the person who drew attention to this. I mean, does that even really matter as long as you have a transcript of the call?
No, you know, you're right. It really doesn't matter if you have a transcript of the call. But I think it matters what the motivation was. What started this? I mean, this could lead to a national trauma of impeaching a president. So you have to say, what started it? What was the motivation? You know, why would you bring this up? What basis do you have to bring this up? So I agree with you. Once the president released that transcript, the whistleblower almost becomes irrelevant because, number one, he wasn't in the room. He didn't hear the call. But I think the question of motivation is certainly an important one and one that Republicans, I think, would love to get into. But right now, they're keeping him behind closed doors, and I think it's because if they do bring him out, it will turn out to it will be very clear to the American public this was part of a partisan plan, and he was the main actor in it.
Well, do you think that the Democrats fear the whistleblower being cross-examined by the Republicans?
Oh, no question. No question about it. Otherwise, look, if they thought he was going to be helpful, he would have been the lead witness today. I think it's interesting that the first two lead witnesses today, neither one were in the room to hear this. They both admitted that in their depositions. They heard it second and third hand. The one person who was in the room, Colonel Vindman, is not a lead witness. You would assume that either side would lead with their strongest witnesses because that's when the people are going to be most interested in watching and following this thing. But you've got your first two witnesses, both of whom are career foreign policy bureaucrats, neither of whom were in the room, and both of whom in their depositions admitted that they heard everything second and third hand.
Impeachment inquiry goes public today. Carl Calabrese joining us live in studio. Carl, what are the chances that we see the president under oath in front of Congress or in front of the Senate as this goes on?
Oh, I slim and none. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton was not under oath in front of the Senate in his impeachment proceedings. If you get to a trial, You'll have impeachment managers from both sides presenting the cases. The senators will serve as jurors, and the proceedings will be overseen by not just a judge, but the Chief Justice of the United States. I mean, that's the procedure. But no, you're not going to see the president in the docket answering questions.
So this has a real legal feel, though, to it.
No question. I mean, it's parallel to our legal system. I mean, in the sense that you could make the analogy that the House of Representatives is serving as a grand jury. If they issue an impeachment bill, that would be like an indictment. That's not a conviction, it's an indictment, and that indictment in the form of an impeachment bill goes to the Senate, which then serves as the as a trial basis with jurors being senators and it's U.S. Chief Justice serving as the judge overseeing it. So, yeah, there are parallels to it, and I understand there are differences, but again, I think we have some basic precepts in the American judicial system of fairness, that you should be allowed to face your accuser, that witnesses should be examined and cross-examined. In the case of impeachment in the past, the president's lawyers were always allowed to see all the documents and participate in all of the proceedings. That has not been the case up to this point. And then you you have those precedents and those procedures that have always been either adhered to or at least acknowledged that have not been adhered to and acknowledged in this procedure thus far.
Would it be smart for somebody who's involved in this over the course of the next few weeks to actually use our modern technology to their advantage? Because you know the president's going to be watching this. At some point, he's going to be tweeting about it and saying what he actually did. And I guarantee you that will go totally over the heads, and nobody who's actually in this will be aware of that. Should somebody have that Twitter feed open, and when the president tweets something, either side says, hey, well, this is what the president says happens. Your response?
Well, he will be tweeting today, I bet you, as these witnesses talk, and he will maybe be giving people nicknames and doing the usual things that Donald Trump does. Schiff has been pretty good at leaking things through social media. Throughout these closed-door hearings, it wasn't unusual that even before the door opened at the end of the meeting that tweets were coming out and leaks were being produced. So, I think you're going to see greater use of that on both sides today, but certainly the president will be watching and listening. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we read some tweets from him. And you know how he is with tweets. I mean, they may end up being the center of the story today and what everybody's talking about by the end of the day.
Getting ready for the first public part of the impeachment inquiry today, Carl Calabrese has been joining us live in studio. Carl, tomorrow morning at this time, what do you think the headline is going to be after today?
It depends on what scenario gets played out. Susan, you asked the question very early on, and it's a very good question. What are the risks for both sides here? The risk for the Republicans is that the Democrats have some witness or some evidence that has not been disclosed yet that is a blockbuster. And if that's the case, Brian, that will be the headline tomorrow. Whatever that blockbuster piece of evidence or that witness revealed, that will be the headline. If they don't, and it's just the same what we've heard up to this point, the first two lead witnesses are career foreign policy bureaucrats, not always known for exciting electric type of personalities and presentations. They weren't in the room. They heard everything second and third hand. If that's the case, it's going to be a whole different headline that this thing kind of fizzled out on the first day. And as we said earlier, you would think from a strategy standpoint that you would lead with your strongest, most compelling, most dramatic witnesses to really bust this thing open. So that's what I'm going to be looking for. Is there something that has not been revealed or said yet that these first two witnesses are going to throw into the arena? And if they have it, then that could change everything. If they don't, I think this will go the same way that the Michael Cohen hearings went, that the Mueller hearings went, and that eventually the Kavanaugh hearings went, that not only do they peter out, but they can backfire on you. And that's why Nancy Pelosi was so reluctant to go down this path and literally was dragged kicking and screaming into doing this, because she understands that there could be a backlash. It could really be centered on those 30, 31, 32 districts that flipped hands. You've got a first-term congressperson going up for reelection. If they lose based on these actions and these proceedings, she could end up not being the speaker, but being the minority leader. So those are the stakes involved. This is high wire politics without a net.
You know, based on previous hearings, there's going to be a lot of grandstanding. How do you suggest people take them in?
Well, you know, I think people will begin to watch, and if these things aren't dramatic, the ratings will tank very quickly as people begin to do other things. Most people are going to go about their regular lives. They're going to go to work. They're going to take kids to school and daycare, and then after school take them to the to whatever activity they're involved in. And then tonight they'll watch their favorite news show, and they'll get a summary of it. And if there's not that blockbuster piece of evidence, that blockbuster witness, tomorrow people will be talking about the latest Sabres game or the UB Bulls game or whatever else is going to dominate their lives. So we'll see. It certainly has potential for being a dominating issue. Up to this point, I haven't seen it, but I'm open to the possibility, having been in politics all my life, that just when you think you've got it figured out, the other side throws a curveball and you're talking about a totally different subject. So let's wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I kind of get that feeling for most people walking around, and maybe for even more people, it's not their favorite news show. My wife's favorite news show around that time, after dinner, settle down. She likes the one where they have like 18 kids, and then they have to take care of all the kids and figure out what's going on. And I don't think they're going to be talking about this tonight on that.
I doubt it. But we know it will dominate all the news networks, liberal, conservative, middle of the road. This is going to be the topic for the next 24 hours, and analyzing and sub-analyzing everything that was said and offered up. And those are just the times we live in. We got a 24-hour news cycle. It has to be filled.
Yeah. Carl, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carl Calabrese with Masiello Martucci, Calabrese and Associates.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.